Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at Graymere Church of Christ.
Scripture reading this morning is taken from the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. Ecclesiastes, chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever.
As we begin a new month, we also begin a new focus. All year we've been thinking about various ways we can increase in our faith. And this morning we're thinking about how we can increase our wisdom. And so our verse that will help us focus on that this month is from Proverbs chapter 1, verse 5. Let's say this together. A wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. Wisdom is important, and we want to increase in our understanding of what true wisdom is, what godly wisdom really is. And so we begin with a sort of feel-good verse of all of the Bible, Ecclesiastes chapter 1, everything is meaningless. Isn't that just a great way to begin the morning? I mean, aren't you glad you came here today to be reminded of how meaningless things are? But there actually are some powerful messages in the book of Ecclesiastes. And this month, as we reflect on wisdom, it's fitting that we go to one of the books that is part of the wisdom literature in the Old Testament, but also a book that has a lot to say about today's culture. And so it's important as we spend the next few Sundays thinking about it, that we reflect on how we can grow in our own wisdom and knowledge. It may seem like a strange place to begin in a lesson on wisdom, but I grew up watching the show Home Improvement. I don't know how many of you ever watched that show, Home Improvement. It was set in Detroit, and so our family was interested in that and some of the references to places that Dad knew about from growing up. But there was a character in Home Improvement who lived next door. His name was Wilson. And you never really got to see Wilson's whole face. He just sort of would look over the picket fence and you'd just see kind of up to here. But typically what would happen is Tim, the main character, would somehow get himself into some confusing situation. He'd go out into the backyard and he'd talk things over with Wilson. And after he talked it over with Wilson, a lot of times Wilson would give him good advice. It might not come out the same way when Tim tried to share it with his family, but you got the sense that this was his friend that got him through. And for whatever reason, I remember one conversation that took place in the backyard on this show where he asked Wilson what his greatest fear was. And Wilson stopped for a moment, and he said that his greatest fear was that all of us, everyone that he knew, was living, and we're all characters in someone else's dream. And that when the dreamer wakes up, we'll all vanish. And there was a long period of silence, and then Tim looked at him and said, Wilson, I don't believe I'd share that with too many people. And then they went on. That was kind of the punchline. I don't know why I remember that, but I remember the fact that you had this sort of a strange conversation about a deep fear, about deep-seated emotion. It's shared with someone else. And then the punchline is, you know, I don't believe I'd share that with anybody. I don't believe I'd talk about that with anyone. And kind of in our family, that got to be a little joke that we would say. I don't believe I'd say that to anybody else. And it's funny because that's typically the way we react when we think about the deep questions of life's meaning. Someone says, I'm not really sure about what life means, and I have these struggles, and I have this, and our initial reaction is, I don't think I'd share that with anyone. I don't think I'd let on to my friends that I really wonder why we're here. I don't think I'd let on to the people I work with that sometimes I have doubts as to what my purpose is in life. I don't really want to share that. That's sort of a realm we don't want to go into. And so anytime that subject comes up, we might get a little uncomfortable. We might make a quick joke. I don't believe I'd say that to anyone and then move on. But if you think about it, living life without really reflecting on its purpose would be like getting in the car to go somewhere and not having any idea where you're going. I mean, how many of us would decide, you know what, I'm just going to get in the car, I'm going to start driving on the road, and once I start driving, I'll figure out where I'm going to go. I'll figure out what I'm going to do. We might do that every once in a while if we're thinking about a place to eat or, you know, if we're trying to take a relaxed drive, but we wouldn't do that every day. We like to have a purpose. We like to have a point. We like to have a plan. And if that's true when it comes to just doing day-to-day activities, shouldn't that be true of our life? That we don't just walk through our life without purpose. That we don't walk through aimlessly. And you see, it's that question that Ecclesiastes gets at. It's that question that we see in Ecclesiastes. What is the meaning of life? And by the way, it's not just Christians. It's not just people who believe in God who have wrestled with that. The famous author, Leo Tolstoy, described a time in his life where he sort of had the leisure time to reflect on life. And I want to read you just a few quotes. And if you thought the phrase, everything is meaningless, was kind of a downer, just listen to what Tolstoy is saying as he's wrestling with some of these issues. He says, today or tomorrow, sickness and death will come. They had come already to those I love or to me. Nothing will remain but stench and worms. Sooner or later, my affairs, whatever they may be, will be forgotten, and I shall not exist. Then why go on making any effort? How can man fail to see this? And how go on living? That is what is surprising. One can only live while one is intoxicated with life. As soon as one is sober, it is impossible not to see that it is all a mere fraud. He ends with this question, is there any meaning in my life that the inevitable death awaiting me does not destroy? Now, you might expect that coming from an author like Tolstoy. You may say, well, he was having a bad day. Maybe he was in a bad mood. But he's wrestling with what everyone is grappling with. Where do I find meaning in life? And to me, that's what's exciting about the book of Ecclesiastes. Because it meets us where we are, and it meets our culture where it is. Just look around. Don't you think our culture is searching for meaning? Don't you think people are searching for something to give life substance? And that's where Ecclesiastes comes in. And so we're introduced to the preacher, or your translation may say teacher, in verse 1 of Ecclesiastes chapter 1. That term in Hebrew, the Kohelet, sort of seems to indicate some kind of preacher or teacher influence. A lot of times when we talk about Ecclesiastes, people who write will just simply use that Hebrew term, the Kohelet. It does seem from an early time that this is connected with King Solomon. And as we read through Ecclesiastes and we start seeing the descriptions that the preacher, that the teacher gives, it lines up very neatly with Solomon's life. When we start talking about wealth, in wisdom. And we know that Solomon wrote Proverbs and Solomon wrote wisdom literature. And so it's fitting that we read this and we think of Solomon penning this letter, that this seems to be coming from his life and from his experience. It's also interesting to see a couple of terms that show up. The first one we've talked about is a meaningless. Yours may say vanity of vanities. That's a hard word for us to capture in English. But what it seems to do is focus on something that's fleeting or transitory. In fact, the Hebrew word that's used there, that hevel, is also connected with the name Abel, from Cain and Abel, all the way back in Genesis. Now, when you talk about something that's fleeting and transitory, Abel's life is sort of the epitome of fleeting and transitory. He didn't live very long before his brother took his life. But it's the idea, not necessarily meaningless in the sense that there's a meaning and I can't understand it, but a fleeting sense where something is here and it's gone. One translator used the image of smoke to describe it. Smoke is kind of disorienting, it's confusing, and it doesn't last very long, and all of a sudden, it's gone. And so when we read that term meaningless, that's what we're thinking of, something that's short-lived, that's brief, it's hard to comprehend, and it doesn't have substance. Another phrase that shows up a lot is under the sun. And we're used to talking about everything under the sun. And when we say that, we're typically meaning everything on earth. Under the sun very literally shows us what's on earth around us. It seems that when we read that phrase here, he's excluding God from the equation. He's saying what happens under the sun is what happens on earth. And so that's why we're going to see some of the things he talks about are not bad things, but when you just look at them under the sun and you take God out of the picture, they're not fulfilling. And so as we think about these phrases, and we think about what happens in the first couple of chapters, we're going to read about some dead ends in life, about some ways that we can go, and once we get there, we realize they don't lead to fulfillment. And again, it may sound negative, but it's important that we point out these dead ends because they highlight the right way to go. And so if we're reading through in chapter 1, the first thing that shows up after he lists some of the laments he has about life is the fact that we see there's a dead end of wisdom. That wisdom, actually as he describes it, wisdom under the sun can be a dead end. Now that may sound strange because we're spending all month thinking about how we can increase our wisdom. And so I think this distinction is helpful. This kind of under-the-sun wisdom, this kind of earthly wisdom, where he tries to grow in knowledge and he tries to go in understanding, that's ultimately not fulfilling because unless it's connected with God, unless it's godly wisdom that's connected with the one who created us, it's not going to be lasting. And so as we read this, I don't think we need to leave here saying, well, I guess wisdom's not all that important. There are too many verses in Scripture that teach us the importance of wisdom. The challenge is, am I thinking about under-the-sun wisdom? Am I thinking about earthly wisdom? Am I thinking about the wisdom that's limited to what wise people on earth have come up with? Because we can come up with some good stuff. We can come up and figure out some things that are pretty helpful, but not all of it is helpful, and none of earthly wisdom is going to give me what I really need. And we'll see that later in the book of Ecclesiastes, how he connects the source of true wisdom and of true life. But as we understand that, he says there are a couple of things that show up. First of all, he says he's gaining all this wisdom and all this knowledge, and it's not changing anything. Look at what verse 14 says in Ecclesiastes 1. He says, I've seen all the works which have been done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity or meaninglessness. There's that word again. And striving after wind, what is crooked cannot be straightened, and what is lacking cannot be counted. In other words, I've gained wisdom, and I've gained knowledge, and certainly Solomon, renowned for his wisdom, understood what it was like to have a level of wisdom and knowledge that it would be hard for us to comprehend. And he says, in the midst of all that, what I've learned is, it doesn't change anything. You get this sense that with all this wisdom he has, he's looking around and realizing, you know, I might have achieved all of this, but that's not changing things. It's not changing what's all around me. And I think we can relate to that. I think we can relate to that because I don't know if you're this way, but there are times in my life where I've felt like, you know, if I could just understand this, everything would be different. If I could just attain this, everything would be different. This would solve my problems, and this would change everything. But what we find out is once we get to that point, once we attain that knowledge, once we understand, here's how I deal with this, then new challenges crop up. We especially see that in the realm of technology. How many technological innovations have we experienced with the idea that, you know, if we could just solve this problem, then everything else would be great. If we could just do this in less time, we'd save so much time, we'd save so much energy, and our problems would be solved. And so a lot of good things have happened, but what happens is, when we make these achievements, guess what? There are other problems that crop up. And so no matter how smart we think we are, that doesn't change the human condition that we need something else. And so he's got this frustration with wisdom. And as he also mentions, wisdom brings with it grief. In fact, look at verse 16. He says, I said to myself, behold, I have magnified and increased wisdom more than all who were over Jerusalem before me, and my mind has observed a wealth of wisdom and knowledge. And I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I realized that this also is striving after wind, because in much wisdom there is much grief, and increasing knowledge results in increasing pain. Have you ever had the experience of learning something you wished you hadn't learned? Maybe you learned it in a way you wish you didn't have to learn it. Or you found out something you wish you had never found out. Maybe you thought you wanted to be in the know on a certain issue, and then when you were, you wished you'd never known it to begin with. Knowledge and wisdom can bring grief with them. And so Solomon, who understands wisdom on a level that you and I probably couldn't ever completely understand, he understands wisdom, and he says, you know, the more wisdom you have, the more grief that's there. That's not going to give my life complete and total purpose. Because if I'm just pursuing wisdom just for the sake of pursuing wisdom, I'm going to end up with more grief than I'd bargained for. And so he's frustrated with that pursuit. He's found a dead end. But then he describes another dead end, and maybe this one is the most fitting for our culture today. The dead end of materialism. And when I say materialism, I'm using a broad term, because he talks about a lot of different avenues he tries for pleasure. And ultimately, what it all comes down to is valuing the material, the physical, over the spiritual. And so just read with me in chapter 2 to see what he does here. In verse 1, he says, I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure. So enjoy yourself. And behold, it too was futility. I said of laughter, it is madness. And of pleasure, what does it accomplish? I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine, while my mind was guiding me wisely, and how to take hold of folly, until I could see what good there is for sons of men to do under heaven the few years of their lives. I enlarged my works. I built homes for myself. I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself, and I planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself, from which to irrigate a forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves, and I had homeborn slaves. Also, I possessed flocks and herds larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. Also, I collected for myself silver and gold and all the treasure of kings and provinces. I provided for myself male and female singers and the pleasures of men, many concubines. Then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me. All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart was pleased because of all my labor, and this was my reward for all my labor. Thus I considered all my activities which my hands had done, and the labor which I had exerted, and behold, all was vanity and striving after wind, and there was no profit under the sun. Isn't it interesting to see how many different things he tried that didn't give him meaning? He's not just observing these sorts of things. He's a participant in this. He's experiencing this. And his physical gratification, desiring not to withhold anything that he might desire, that gave him no meaning. Pleasure didn't ultimately satisfy. And this is so important, because we live in a culture that tells us that the exact opposite is true. And it's amazing, because we keep getting that message that if you really want meaning in life, you have to have things that give you pleasure. And yet we know from our own experience that pleasure doesn't last, that those things don't last. And I love this time of year for a lot of reasons, but one of the things that happens is we'll be flooded with commercials and videos online and billboards that just promise, if you had this, this would equal pleasure, and then pleasure would equal meaning for your life. You know, if you really loved your parents, you would get them this. If you really loved your children, you would make sure they had this. Because it's all about sort of what we can give ourselves. And if the highest level of thought, if the highest purpose in life is just to gratify myself, where is that going to lead me? Ecclesiastes tells us it doesn't lead us anywhere good. It doesn't lead us anywhere lasting. Pleasure didn't give meaning. And even a property that he discusses didn't give meaning. He had a great, incredible wealth. I mean, Solomon, if you read about all that he possessed, is not only impressive to us today, it would have been monumental in the time in which he lived. And if you noticed as we read through, he constantly used a phrase there, myself. I did this for myself. So I enlarged my works. I built houses for myself, planted vineyards for myself, gardens and parks for myself, for myself, for myself. That was where his focus was. And this property for himself ultimately doesn't give him meaning. Growing up in the Memphis area, obviously, very familiar with Elvis Presley and with the landmark in Memphis, Graceland. If you've never been there, you ought to go. It's really fascinating. It's a great experience. But it's this huge, you know, estate, and there are all these different things that are connected with it. And one of the members at the congregation where I grew up, Brother C.W. Bradley, had preached for years before retiring. And he used to carry in his car the cassette from the funeral for Elvis Presley. He preached part of the funeral for Elvis. And I always thought that was an interesting reminder that you have this incredible estate and incredible property, but we won't all be around as long as the property we might accumulate or the things we might accumulate will. It doesn't last. And so his property didn't give him meaning. And wealth didn't give him meaning. Closely connected with that. 1 Kings 10 tells us all about Solomon's wealth. He had gold, silver, ivory, animals, horses, chariots, spices, everything you could think of. In fact, when the Queen of Sheba comes in 1 Kings 10, she said that she'd heard about his words and wisdom. I did not believe the reports until I came and my eyes had seen it. And behold, she said, the half was not told to me. You exceeded in wisdom and prosperity the report which I heard. He had more wealth than we can imagine in an area where not only did he have power, but his wealth would have dwarfed the possessions of anyone else around him, and it still didn't give him meaning. Wealth didn't do it. And even deciding that he wasn't going to withhold anything from himself, doing what he wanted, didn't give him meaning. And as he paints this picture at the end of that passage we just read, where he's looking back on everything that he had done, for himself. Everything he had done to gratify himself. And he said, this was my reward. This was it. Now I'm enjoying it. He said, that doesn't give meaning. Last summer, several of us who were at Horizons at Fried Hardeman got to hear a lot of great speakers. One of those speakers, Brad Montague, talked about what it was like to be on the journey that he and his family went on as they did those Kid President videos over the last few years. If you haven't seen those online, they're worth watching. Good positive messages. But as a result of those videos, he got to meet a lot of very famous people. And he talked about doing these videos with Tom Hanks and with Beyonce and with Kevin Costner and all these big-name celebrities that would come in and they'd be award-winning. And they had all of these accomplishments and all of these accolades. But Brad is the director for these little videos. They would do the video, and when they were done, he said, almost without fail, all of those celebrities would look and say, was that okay? Did I do okay? Was that all right? And he said he just had to laugh. You know, when Tom Hanks has won two Oscars, looks at him and says, was that okay? You know, I say, yeah, it was great. You know how to do this. You know how to act. You know how to do these things. But the point he was making was that all of these accolades that they had achieved, they still had questions about, am I doing all right? You know, none of these accolades could stack up to the point where they didn't have to ask that question. All that we achieve, eventually, we're still going to be asking those questions of meaning. So wisdom is a dead end. Materialism is a dead end. And then he also talks about the futility of work, that work was a dead end. Now, obviously, I want you to make sure that you don't go into work tomorrow morning and say, hey, guess what? We found out at church work doesn't matter, so we're going to do things differently around here. It's not what I'm saying. Because just like we talked about wisdom, there are so many passages in Scripture that show the value of work, that show what it's like to work and to do what God had even had in the garden. There was work in the garden. So again, we're thinking about under the sun kind of work. Work that's not connected with anything outside our lives here and now. and that kind of work. Solomon said, if all I'm doing is trying to work, that doesn't last forever. In fact, he goes on to say in verse 18 of chapter 2, thus I hated all the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun, for I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool, yet he will have control over the fruit of my labor for which I have labored by acting wisely under the sun. He's saying, you know, it doesn't matter how well I do. Eventually someone else is going to be over that, and I don't have any control over that decision. And by the way, if you look at Solomon's life, you know what happened with his son Rehoboam when he came to the throne? He decided instead of easing up on the taxes of the people, he was going to bear down harder. The kingdom divided. What we read here actually came true in the life of Solomon because he didn't have any control anymore. And so this under the sun view of work, this connected with earth view of work, doesn't last forever. It also doesn't provide lasting rewards. If all I'm thinking about is what work does for me here on earth, those rewards are going to be just as temporary. In verse 22, he says, what does a man get in all his labor and in his striving with which he labors under the sun? Can you imagine being in Solomon's position? Being able to not just get some things that you'd like, but to get anything you would like. And then to say, you know, ultimately this isn't lasting. Work is a good thing that was created by God. But just on its own, it can't bear the weight of life's meaning. In fact, none of the three things we've talked about, work, and then maybe instead of materialism, maybe we think about pleasure. Work, pleasure, wisdom. Those things were created by God. When they are considered in context, and when they're connected with our service to God, they're blessings from Him. But if we make those the sole focus of our lives, they can't handle the weight of that. We still have a lot of leaves at our house, and so we spent time yesterday raking some leaves, trying to get some things cleaned out of our bushes. And if you went out in your yard, and let's say you were wanting to rake some leaves in your yard, and what you had was a fork from your silverware drawer, and you decided you were going to rake some things up, it probably wouldn't work out very well. It's not that there's anything wrong with the piece of silverware. It's just not what it was designed for. You're putting more pressure on it. You're trying to use it for something that it was never intended to do. And what we read here is that these things that God had created, if we use them as the means to purpose in life, if that's where we find our meaning, we're out there in the yard with the fork trying to rake up leaves. We're doing something with this it was never intended to do. And so we're reminded, as we will be once we get to the end of Ecclesiastes, of what the duty of man is in serving God. When we connect these things to God, all of a sudden it changes. When I strive to find godly wisdom in my life, I'll get blessings that I never could have imagined otherwise. If I seek to find pleasure in what God has created for me to find pleasure in, following His guidelines, pleasure in serving Him, I'll get a lasting sense of satisfaction that can't come from anything temporary. If I connect what I do at work with my service to God, if I work hard because I'm working for the Lord, because I want to do my best to fulfill my God-given potential, that will give me a satisfaction that won't come from anywhere else. In fact, when Jesus comes in the New Testament, He does things differently. He stands out. And maybe at that time they were not quite as reticent to talk about life's meaning and life's purpose as we might be today. They still saw there was something different about Him. You see, when Jesus talked about wisdom, He spoke as one with authority. The scribes all had to cite someone else, but Jesus had a different kind of teaching, a different kind of wisdom. Jesus' followers didn't have much in the way of physical possessions, but Jesus taught about abundant life, life they could have to the full, a different kind of satisfaction. And when Jesus talked to those who followed Him, He connected their work with something more than just a vocation. It connected it to a spiritual identity, to being fishers of men. This morning, if I decide I'm going to follow Jesus, I'm avoiding the dead ends. I'm choosing the path that leads me to wisdom that will provide blessings in my life, to pleasure that will provide lasting satisfaction in serving Him, and to work that will truly satisfy, because I won't just be thinking about what's temporary here. I'll be thinking about what I can do here to affect eternity. It doesn't matter what line of work we're in, what stage of life we're in, all of us are on the same path when it comes to looking for meaning, because as Ecclesiastes reminds us, there's really only one way to go. This morning, if you need to follow that path, maybe you've asked some of these questions, but you've sort of avoided it, saying, well, I don't want to talk about that, I don't want to think about that. Now is the time to consider what it means to truly understand what lasts and to become a child of God. If you need to turn your life around, to put Christ on in baptism, being ready to live for Him every day, you can do that this morning. It may be that you need prayers and encouragement. If you'd like to pray with a couple of our elders right after this service, if you go through that doorway, there'll be a couple of elders who'd love to talk with you and pray with you. But it may be you want to pray with all of us. Let's all leave here focused on living for the One who gives us ultimate and lasting satisfaction in this life and a promise of eternity in the life to come. If there's any way we can help you, please come as we stand and as we sing together.